Good morning.
So we've learned a lot going through some of the medical stuff this year. And one of the things we learned is that God has given each of our bodies a special ability. Almost a superpower, as some might say. And it's called survival mode. When we go into survival mode, a lot of interesting things happen. Our veins flood with adrenaline. And our senses become very, very sensitive. What we hear and what we smell and what we taste and what we feel becomes heightened. We become hyper aware. Our brains become super focused and we become much stronger than we were before. So when you hear stories of mothers that are able to lift the front end of a car off of their child, it's that survival mode. It's all of that adrenaline that pumps through. And maybe it's the inner junior high boy within me. But it makes me wonder, and maybe some of you would ask the question, well, if we have these abilities, why don't we just have them all the time? Why can't we stay in that mode? Well, that mode also has consequences and challenges. There's trade-offs. As we've learned with some of Anna's issues, when she's been stuck in that mode, it's been part of why her body can't digest anything. It shuts down the stomach. And if we were being chased by a lion, I think we would appreciate not having a need to eat, nor having a need to use the toilet. Because that's an inconvenient thing to do when we're being chased by a lion. But it also makes us hypersensitive. And our pain sensors get all out of whack. We lose the ability to rest. And we lose the ability to have our body repair and heal. When we're in survival mode, our brain is so hyper-focused on the present that we have almost no ability to think to the future and make plans for tomorrow. So physically, we know it's probably not a good idea to be stuck in survival mode. And some of us maybe have been in that for a prolonged period of time and could testify, no, you don't want to be stuck in survival mode, not with what it physically does, the toll it has on our bodies. But the way we live our lives, spiritually, emotionally, sometimes we get stuck, maybe not physically, but we get stuck in survival mode. We have a hard time trusting that tomorrow won't be the battle that today and yesterday was. We have a hard time trusting that we deserve God's blessings, trusting that God can intervene and change things. We begin to feel like we just deserve the toil. We become anxious about where our provision comes from, about our stability at work or in our careers. We get stuck there. And if you've lived there, or maybe you are there right now, I hope that we can glean some things together from Joseph's story. And today, not even so much Joseph, who's been through it, but also that of Jacob and the other sons of Israel. See, they've been through the fire. It wasn't that long ago that Jacob and his sons were arguing about going back to Egypt, but they knew their choice was to go back to Egypt and face this man they did not yet realize was their brother, or die of starvation. You have Joseph, who now is second in command to Pharaoh, but had to live through all of the struggles of being imprisoned, sold into slavery, betrayed by his brothers. For Joseph and Jacob and the children of Israel, all of the trauma, the guilt that the brothers had, the loss, the crisis, the famine, they were all taking a serious toll. And after God shows himself to Jacob, yet again, he is able to trust God and move his family from just simply surviving the day to thriving. Living out the promise God made to Abraham that his offspring would be a blessing and not a curse to the world. That the world would be blessed through his children, through his family. Well, I've watched a little bit of the news this past week. I'm sure some of you have too. I joked with Beth. I said, I feel like I kind of have to keep the news on a little bit just to make sure that there aren't nuclear bombs flying through the air. Because we live in a world that has a lot of chaos and trauma. We have friends that are working hard or have been working hard to adopt a whole sibling group from Ukraine. And now they know those children that have been in their home, that have had a prolonged visit here beforehand, are now in a shelter in a basement as shells just rock their home. There's a lot of crisis. We also joke that it felt like COVID ended the day the war began. Because you turn on the news, you don't hear much about COVID anymore. But it's still with us, and the stress and the trauma from that is still upon us. We've lived through a lot in these short years, and I'm not trying to compare it to generations past, because we all know that staying at home was a little bit less of an ask of society than what the greatest generation went through in World War II. But that trauma and that stress, it builds up and it gets us stuck in this survival mode. And what God wants for us, what He wants for each of us, for you, is for you to be able to move beyond simply surviving into thriving. We see it in the words of Jesus when He said, I have living water to offer you. Not water that simply quenches the thirst for a moment, but water that deeply quenches the thirst within. God's plan for us has always been that His people thrive. But sometimes we get stuck. Just like we see the children of Israel here were stuck in survival mode. So the first thing I want us to look at is how Jacob's descendants, when he answers God's call, are given the best in the best land. Before we get into that verse, I want to read just back a few verses in Genesis chapter 46 and verse 2. This is the call that I'm talking about that Jacob answers. And God spoke to Israel. Again, that's the new name that God gave Jacob in a vision at night and said, Jacob, Jacob, here I am, he replied. I am God, the God of your father, he said. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you into a great nation there. I will go down to Egypt with you, and I will surely bring you back again. And Joseph's own hand will close your eyes. See, Jacob was anxious about what does it mean for me to leave this land that my father and my father before him had taken such special care of. This land that was promised to us, this land that Abraham left his home for. What does it mean for me to leave that? And God says, trust me. I will be with you. You will not be alone. I will go down to Egypt with you, and there I will make you a great nation. Your children will multiply, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren. You will become a great nation there. I will provide, and no enemy will close your eyes. No enemy will be at your side when you die, but it will be the son that you thought was lost to you. He will be the one that in that final moment, when all is done, will close your eyes, will comfort you, and will cry at your side. You will be surrounded by those you love. I mean, we can't ask for much more than that. And as Abraham is worried, or not Abraham, as Jacob is worried about what it means to leave Cana and to go to Egypt, God says, trust me. And Jacob does. And because he trusted God, because he rested in God's promise, his descendants are given the best land in Egypt. Look at the first half of 47, verse 6. And the land of Egypt is before you. Settle your father and your brothers in the best part of the land. Let them live in Goshen. Now for us in Indiana, we're thinking, Goshen, the best part of the land? I don't know. Different context, different Goshen. And it's really not that bad up there. But I think for us to understand this, we've got to go back a little bit. We've got to get some context. We can't forget this family's past experience in Egypt. Of the previous times they've been there, it hasn't gone so well. This is really the third foray that Abraham's sons, or himself and his sons, have gone down to Egypt. When Abraham went there, he went there because there was some famine. But because his wife was beautiful, because Sarah was beautiful, he lies to Pharaoh and says, this is my sister, out of fear of being persecuted or killed, for Pharaoh to take his wife to now be part of Pharaoh's harem of wives. Pharaoh gets angry when he's cursed, and he's got all these problems that come from that. And it's not a good situation. And he gives stuff to Pharaoh. He gives people to Pharaoh. He says, just get out of here. Or Pharaoh says that to Joseph, or to Abraham. I'm sorry. I didn't sleep a lot last night. So Pharaoh gives Abraham all of that as he leaves. Now we see the same almost story told about Isaac, Abraham's son. And now we're a third time in, and this time things are very, very different. Instead of being a curse upon Pharaoh and Egypt, we see that they're going in and given the best land, that he has an opportunity to be not a curse, but a blessing, to give his blessing to Pharaoh. Again, the scriptures make it clear that Egyptians don't really like Canaanites. They don't really like Hebrews. They don't like people from that region, and they really don't like herdsmen. And Joseph knows all of these things, and it's amazing to see how Joseph is kind of worried about it as you read chapter 46 and now here in 47. Joseph is coaching his brothers on what to say. Because he's like, well, when Pharaoh asks you this, you need to make sure you answer it this way. You need to make sure you don't give any more information than you need to. You know, we're going to work this out. But you can see that Joseph is nervous about the outcome of this conversation. But he didn't need to be. He was nervous and he was frightened about what could happen. But in the end, Pharaoh is so excited to give this blessing to Joseph's family, to his father and his brothers. And much of that is because of the obedience and the blessing that Joseph gave to Pharaoh already. See, as we live out God's design and God's plan, we should not be a stench to our neighbors, but a blessing. When things get hard and our neighbors need help, it's those who walk with Christ that have opportunity if we're sensitive to the Holy Spirit, if we're sensitive to His leading, to be able to help be problem solvers, not problem makers. I was at a church planting conference, and I heard a guy talking about his church plant. And again, I'm not trying to pick on this pastor, but I am. And he's talking about how he reaches out to his neighbors. And one of the things that really caught us off guard was that he said, you know what? My neighbor and I have a great relationship. He's like, I never mow my lawn. My neighbor just mows it for me. And we're thinking about this, and we're like, really? Because I think all of us have one of those neighbors that don't mow their lawn and the grass gets real tall and then eventually you get frustrated enough that you just come and you mow it for them because you're tired of looking at the weeds and all of the other things that are coming up. That's not how God designed us to reach out to our neighbors. Not to annoy them into doing things for us. Instead, we're to be a blessing. We're to be a blessing as we live out the gospel. As we are the hands and the feet of Jesus. That kindness, that compassion, that heart of Christ comes out. And that's what we saw in Joseph. So much so that Pharaoh has put aside his prejudice against the people from this region, prejudice against herdsmen. And he's embracing, he's welcoming in the family and giving them the best of the land. See, when we obey God, we can rest in Him. We can rest in Him to make the path clear. It doesn't mean that it won't be without bumps. It doesn't mean that it won't be without trial. But as we go through those hard things, the grace of God will be with us. So we will be able to go through challenges and difficulty. And the rest of the world around us may say, oh my goodness, how can they deal with that? How are they still standing? Well, the grace of God, it undergirds us. It lifts us through it. So it doesn't mean that everything is always smooth sailing, but God's provision and His power and His rest will be there through all of it. God can give us rest miraculously, divinely, even in the midst of hard things. But God doesn't design it to be hard all the time either. The second thing we see is that God uses him, or Jacob, to bless Pharaoh. Verse 7, when Joseph brought his father Jacob and presented him before Pharaoh, after Jacob blessed Pharaoh. It's a powerful moment. God has set the stage again. He aligned the circumstances where Jacob is not only willing, but he's also able to bless Pharaoh. And Pharaoh is willing to receive it. If that doesn't sound like a big deal to you, imagine today you decided you wanted to bless the President of the United States. How are you going to do that? I mean, you can bless him right here and right now, but not like that, the way that Pharaoh was blessed by Jacob. I think you're going to have a hard time picking up the phone and saying, you know what, I really would like to bless the President right now. Maybe not even the president, just the CEO of a major company. Let's get Jeff Bezos on the line. Let's get Elon Musk on the line and say, I'd really like to provide God's blessing to you. I think that you would probably not get a call back. A celebrity, call up Oprah and say, I'd like to bless you. You're probably not getting a call back. So God aligned these circumstances that at the time, one of the most powerful men in the world is willing and excited to receive the blessing of Jacob. Again, it was because God had set the stage through Joseph, through his obedience, through his sacrifice, and through the ways that Joseph had already blessed not only Pharaoh, but the people of Egypt. God had positioned Jacob because of his faithfulness, and even more so the faithfulness of Joseph, that he could now bless Pharaoh and his people, again, breaking through their prejudice, through their dislike of the Hebrew people. This is powerful. And finally, we see that Pharaoh put Jacob's family in charge of his flock. Verse 47, verse 6b. And if you know any among them with special ability, put them in charge of my own livestock. I mean, again, we have to take a moment that it was just a short time ago that these brothers and their father were considering the very real possibility of starvation. And now they are tending the flocks and the herds of Egypt. The best of the best animals are in their care. And at the end of the section that Linda read for us today, we see that regular and daily provisions of food were provided to each of the children, to each of their family members, according to the size of their family. Few of us have ever seriously gone hungry in America today. And I hope that with our food pantry, few here have legitimately gone hungry. I'm not talking about where it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and you haven't had lunch yet. But I'm saying that real fear of food security. They had been through that, and now God has given them control over the best of the land and the best of the flock, the best of the herds. But we see even in the brothers later that sometimes, even after our circumstances change, they can and we can struggle to be stuck in survival mode. We see this in the brothers after the death even of their father, when they're worried that Joseph was only nice to them, was only forgiving them while their father was alive and was now going to retaliate. We get stuck sometimes, even when our circumstances change. So we go through trauma, we go through difficulty, we go through, again, there's enough of it shared at the moment. I think that there's a real design by the enemy to have us be scared. It's all over the place. Be aware of the emergency, the emergency, the emergency. And in a short time, when something happens and there's peace, hopefully, between Ukraine and Russia, I guarantee you there will be something right on its heels to push us into fear again. Maybe it's China and Taiwan. There's a pretty big list of possibilities, and I don't want to scare you any more than you are. Jesus said it this way, "The poor and the sick will always be among you." So it's part of Jesus' answer to why he was willing to allow this woman to worship and anoint his feet. These problems aren't going away. If for Jesus it was a situation where the poor and the sick would always be there, we have to accept that reality, that we live in a fallen world that will have crisis after crisis. And if we believe the Scriptures, as we get closer to the end before Jesus comes back, it's not going to get easier. It's going to get harder. And there will be more and more drama as it happens. So how do we do that when we have this constant barrage of crisis, not to mention our own trauma? We all go through hard stuff. For Beth and I, we're having to talk to somebody, not just each other, but like professional counselors so that we can process the hard things our family's been through this year. There's no shame in that. I'm proud to say that we do that. It's not that we're deficient. It's that sometimes you need a little extra help. But we all go through things. We're not unique in that. Every family goes through crisis and trauma and hardship. And it's easy to get stuck in crisis mode. Sometimes it's because we think we deserve it. Well, things are really hard, and it's what I deserve. It's what I've earned. It's the bed that I've made. And we forget that God offers us grace. And He offers us mercy. Maybe it's that we struggle to see past the trees or the weeds of all the stuff in culture, and it might be time for us to turn off the TV for a little bit. And I don't care if you're an MSNBC or Fox News fan, if you are starting your morning with cable news or any news, you're doing it wrong. God welcomes us into His Word. these love letters. I've had to change my habits around, and there's an app I have on my phone called Daily Audio Bible. A gentleman named Brian, I don't even know where he lives. I think he might be English. He's got a very soothing voice, and he reads the scriptures. If you go through it in a year, you get the entire year. I haven't hit every single day, but I try and make it a habit to start my morning off with about a half an hour of the scriptures, and there's about 20 minutes of prayer requests from all around the world. And it's prayer requests, and then it's how God's answered those prayers. Where we put our focus is important. To be able to get a little bit of a distraction from the trauma and the turmoil in my world, in our world, and to say, okay, God, what do you have to say to me today? And maybe it's because things have just been hard. Sometimes it's hard to expect that tomorrow won't be like yesterday and the day before and the day before that, but we have to have faith that God can change our circumstances. That God has the ability to change our circumstances. If you're struggling today in survival mode, and worship team, you can come forward. If you're struggling today in survival, maybe not physically, but oftentimes when we struggle emotionally, when we struggle in survival mode, it does take a toll on us physically. If you're there, know that you can rest in God this morning, and it is not His plan or His will for you to stay there. God has called His people to thrive, not just survive. He's called His people into good things and blessing, and we see that in the example of Jacob and his sons. And that is no less true for us today. That as we walk with Him, He will give good things to His children. He will open doors. He will provide rest. God wants us to thrive. And it's been His plan from the beginning. There's no change. If you go all the way back to the beginning in Genesis, if you go all the way back to the covenant with Abraham, the plan has always been that He's going to lift up His people, that He's going to encourage His people and bless His people so that we can be a blessing to others. God doesn't go out and buy a bunch of billboards. He didn't have a huge spend on TV airtime. His plan from the beginning was that He would have a handful of people, a remnant of people that He would pour Himself into and that they would represent Him to the world. And when He blesses us, we can then be a blessing to others. If we're stuck in survival mode, if we're stuck barely hoping to hang on for another day, it becomes very difficult for us to live out that promise. So it's not a guilty thing. It's not a shameful thing to ask for God's blessing. If our hope is to be blessed by God so that we can turn around and bless others. To say, God, provide for me so that I can be a light to provide for my neighbors, for my niece, for my nephew, for my sibling, for my mother, whoever it is in your life that God has placed that doesn't yet know Him. God's power can be poured out upon you so that you can be the hands and feet to pour out that blessing on them. We don't know Pharaoh's full story. Just like we don't know Nebuchadnezzar's. As Rachel said, God can even use an evil king for His purposes. But I wonder when I get to heaven, if we might not see one of those evil kings that was transformed, that was brought to salvation because of the light, because of the love, because of the witness and the blessing of a child of God. We live in a world that's polarized. We live in a world where anyone who thinks differently than us is supposed to be our enemy. But in the story that God tells, even God's enemies can be reconciled to become His friends. So again, if you're stuck in survival mode, I pray that you would lay that down at the altar and say, this morning, God, help me trust You and rest in You, and I pray that You would pour out Your blessing upon me, not that it can stay with me, not that I can be a cul-de-sac, a dead end of Your blessing, but so that I can reflect it and share it with those around me, even with those who don't yet know You. Let's worship together.